This show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Denise, Brennan, Nelson from the Nooner Show. If it wasn't for them, Kent and I would have never been here. We came down a couple of months ago. Kent and I, with Paul Davis and Jackie and Denise, interviewed Joe Davis, who's a commentator for Fox Sports. Interesting, there was a full-page article yesterday in the USA Today about Vin Scully's retirement. Joe Davis is going to be replacing him for all the road games. So anyway, just kind of cool how this all worked out. Very neat studio. Kent Austin is here with me. My name's Neil Roars.
Looking forward to a great show, man.
At least we hope so. Yeah. The drink of the day is Dos Equis Amber, just so you all know. That's the only commercial that's ever worked on me, and I wanted to be the most interesting man in the world, so I decided to try it and love it. Can't stop.
And if you hear, that means we are opening another one.
We hope to have a different twist on politics. We've come to the conclusion you can make a difference. All of the national issues actually trickle down to the local level in bigger ways than you might imagine. We hope to point some of these out to you, give you some ideas on how you can get involved and how you can make a change. The amazing workaholic Jessica is here with us running the board, which is – we appreciate that so much because obviously we have no idea what we're doing except talking.
That's why you have me.
Yes, and thank you so much. We've come to the conclusion if you think the Republicans or Democrats are going to fix any of the major issues out there, we really kind of think you're mistaken. There are a lot of leaders among us. We just need to find them and get them to stand up and lead. We need to organize independently and under simple, basic principles. I'll just tell you a quick story. Kent and I met 7 years ago.
About 7 years ago, yeah.
And we just kind of crossed paths on a couple of different things. My first involvement ever going to a political meeting of any kind was based on an article that was in a paper on January 26, 2009. And it said road commissioner's benefits question. And kind of interesting, little old Eaton County, there are five road commissioners, and the article says that work 10 to 15 hours a month, and those road commissioners were getting free health insurance that was costing the county $100,000 a year. And a friend of mine and I looked at the article and said, well, that's just bizarre. So we decided to go to the meeting. And what the strange thing about the meeting, there are a lot of county commissioners in Eaton County. There are 15, and the room's kind of set up a big horseshoe table, and a number of people were somewhat upset about this article and wanted to go voice their opinion. And when we stood up at the podium and made our case for why we thought this was wrong, none of the commissioners were even paying any attention. I mean, they absolutely were ignoring the people in the audience. And it's like, wow, this is little old Eaton County, and the county commissioners who are elected pay no attention to us. So we decided to get involved. And at some point, not long after that's when Kent and I met.
Well, yeah, I met. My first meeting was summer of 2009, went to a Republican meeting and didn't know anything about the processes, and then get the Tea Party movement started, kind of got involved in that. And it didn't take long to find out that your elected officials, they're not the brightest people in the county. So we started taking on some issues and getting involved, and it led us to this radio show.
Right. And we've had a very small group of people can have an impact at the local level. And that's where I think that people who are very frustrated what's going on at the state level, the national level, get involved at the local. You can have an impact and meet some great people along the way. It was kind of funny as this health insurance issue kind of continued and more people started writing letters to the editor. The first article was January of 2009. Then there was an article November 30th, 2009, Eaton County officials to keep health care. And it goes through and it just talks about some of the health care costs were $22,000 per commissioner. And the folks were working 10 to 15 hours per month, not per week, per month. And then December of 2009, another article came out in the Lansing State Journal said Nick's benefits for Eaton County Road Panel. Says a February editorial said Eaton County had an easy call when it came to health benefits for part-time road commission. Not easy enough, it seems. The Eaton County Board of Commissioners failed recently to eliminate those benefits. And there was another public outcry, and a few months later, those benefits were eliminated. So we had an impact.
And the impact was basically a handful of people.
Very, very small group of people that just wouldn't say no and wouldn't quit.
Right. I think it's a good story to tell of the gentleman that sat at the podium when he was being ignored. I thought that was comical. That he did not like being ignored, and he just – well, tell the story real quick.
Well, the last gentleman was speaking. I didn't know the guy at the time, and since we've become friends, but he went up to the podium and he said, "I've never heard of such a thing. Obviously, there's some improprieties here, and I'm not leaving till my question gets answered and we get to the bottom of this." And he leaned over the podium and just stared and didn't say anything. And if you've ever been in that situation, typically the first person to speak loses. And all of a sudden people started wondering, why is this guy standing there staring at us? And the chairman at the time happened to be listening and got a little annoyed and was the first one to speak. And that's kind of when it all started, when they refused to change those benefits and to do the right thing. More and more the public came out against it and they changed it.
Right. And he didn't have to really even say much except stare at him.
Yep. It worked like a charm. A friend of ours on Facebook, and we've been trying to hype the show as much as possible in our little group and get the name out there. But a friend on Facebook said we ought to explain the Republican delegate system and how the Republican convention took place. Now, this is not going to be a Republican show because we've had our issues with the Republicans and the Democrats, and we kind of think that we're common sense, and that's where everybody needs to be. But we'll kind of go through and explain this past week's Republican convention or Republican state convention. I was out of town for my son's wedding, and my son actually married Denise from the Nooner Show's daughter in Key West. You probably heard about that if you listen to the Nooner Show. It was great fun. But I was out of town for the county convention, which Kent went to.
It was a blast. Yeah.
Well, in the county convention, think about this. There are 81 counties, I think, in Michigan, or 83, one of the other, 83 counties in Michigan. Each county, Republican and Democrat, I'm sure, has a county convention. And you elect county delegates to go to the state convention. So in Eaton County, there were 25 or 27
delegates elect
county delegates elected
and alternates
and alternates. So you've got double that number to then go to the state convention. I wasn't able to be there, but I mean, it's a fairly timely process. Kent was involved with it.
Correct. And counting ballots and it's a several hour ordeal.
Yeah, there's no streamlined way to do it really at the county level. So the state or the county delegates to go to the state convention get elected. I happen to be one of those. So Friday, I went to the state convention. And again, I'm not saying this is bad or good. I'm just saying it was somewhat of a moot exercise. So we go to the state convention on Friday at the Lansing Center. And it's kind of interesting because it was a virtual tie between Cruz and Kasich, and Trump won. But Michigan is a proportional state. It's not a winner-take-all state the way it worked out. So each of the 14 congressional districts will have one delegate for Cruz, one for Kasich, and one for Trump. And then there's one alternate, and these are the people that are going to go to the National Republican Convention. That adds up to 42. There are also 17 at-large delegates, 11 of which went to Trump, 3 to each for Kasich and Cruz. So on Friday, there was no agenda. Nothing was printed out. Nothing was handed out ahead of time. And Robert's rules of order dictate how these meetings go. And if you decide you want to run for office, and Kent can attest to this because Kent is an Eaton County commissioner, you might want to brush up on your Robert's rules of order a little bit. Would you say so, Kent?
Oh, yeah. They can kind of shut you down if you don't know them.
So we get into this meeting, and I'll just read you part of the conversation that took place, because the whole meeting was really about procedure. So here's one exchange. Could the secretary read the mover and the second for the call to the question and the second call to the question? And the question was asked, is this before the vote? After the vote on the amendment, there was a call to the question, who moved it and who seconded it? So-and-so moved it and so-and-so seconded it. Well, after you listen to this for a little while, you kind of start to daydream, which I was doing. And there was a vote to take place, and I thought the vote was on, are we going to take a 15-minute recess? And when the vote was taken, I voted aye because I wanted a 15-minute recess. And then that was we voted to approve all the procedures, which hadn't been printed out and really were read but not remembered. So anyway, that closed all of the conversation. And then there were 25 think about this, the 25 delegates from Eaton County. There are seven counties in the 7th district. So most of the debate centered around the 15-minute break. After the procedures were voted on, a slate of delegates were put together, three primary, three alternate, one for each candidate, and then we took the 15-minute recess. Now, Kent, why do you think we took the 15-minute recess?
Did they want to change the rules?
No, they'd set the rules, but that was so everybody could take time to come up with an opposing slate. And what I didn't understand, I don't think a lot of people, we never heard from the delegates that are going to go to the national convention, who they were supporting, why, and if they were going to stick with them. We just had this slate proposed, and then a 15-minute recess was to come up with opposing slates to run against the primary slate that was decided more or less at the county conventions.
This sounds like Robert's rules for confusion to me.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was, because I was going to ask a question as to why weren't we going to hear from the delegates? Well, never got a chance to ask the question because I voted on what I thought was the break. I voted to close the discussion along with everybody else, and all the questions were stopped. So at that point, we went on a recess. We came back. There was another slate, and the vote took place, and it was a done deal. I mean, and I didn't really have a problem with the people that were going to be the delegates from our district, but never got to hear from them. There was no debate. There was no nothing. It was determined before the convention ever took place, really, and that's what my problem was. And that was just Friday night.
Well, I guess I'm wondering, why do we bring people around the state to Lansing when it's already predetermined?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was wondering. So I was kind of fired up about Saturday. Of course, got to drive home in a huge snowstorm. And then Saturday morning went back. Well, Saturday, we voted on National Committee Man, National Committee Woman, which, again, that was, the people that were on the ballot, there were two running for each single slot. Kind of predetermined somewhat, and then we voted on a couple I can't think what you would call it, that we voted that we would support Israel. I mean, again, kind of a no-brainer. Then the slate of the at-large delegates was presented, which was 11 for Trump, 3 for Cruz, 3 for Kasich, and again, there was no debate. Nobody spoke. Nobody said who they were supporting. What happened next was there was kind of a timeout for anybody to submit a opposing slate of delegates.
And did anybody do that?
No, nobody did it. Nobody knew. Well, at least I didn't know that that's how it was going to work. I was there to hear who they supported and why. And nothing happened. So pretty soon it said, well, the slate was approved and we are adjourned. And it's like, I've spent a Friday night and a Saturday morning out of my life to do this, and it was absolutely, in my mind, and I know there are some people that take this real serious, but in my mind, it was an absolute waste of time.
Well, just count it a blessing that you're from Eaton County and not Houghton Hancock and had to drive 10 to 12 hours down for that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, seriously, I would have been furious. Now, here's, to me, the interesting thing. And there's a lot of Trump people out there that are yelling and screaming about what happened in Colorado as far as the delegates in Colorado and how they all went to Cruz. And you know that better than I do. So explain that a little bit if you could.
Well, I mean, these were all rules that were set last fall in Colorado. So it wasn't a rule change. And I'm no expert on Colorado or Missouri or how they do their conventions and caucuses. But every state has different rules that they follow. And Trump is saying, well, they stole the delegates. They're just following the rules that were set. And basically, we're finding out this election nationally is finding out that our votes really don't mean too much. Because it all comes down to the conventions and the caucus, and they hand out delegates based on who can operate the system or the current rules the best. And in Colorado, Ted Cruz seemed to know the system pretty well out there and got the delegates.
Well, and here's the interesting thing, and this is a story that was in the I believe it was the State Journal. It says, but if no candidate receives enough initial support at the national convention, the party will stage a second round of voting in which Michigan delegates would no longer be bound to vote as they did at first. Now, see, here's why I wanted to hear from these people. Are you serious about supporting Trump, Cruz, or Kasich, or are you going to flip your vote in the second vote? Because virtually everybody knows that it's going to be a contested or a brokered convention because nobody's going to have the 1237 necessary.
Correct. And that's what I asked you when you come back from the convention is were you able to vet or listen to any of these candidates that were running for delegates for Kasich or Trump or Cruz? Are they strong supporters for them or are they just waiting to get through the first vote so they can vote? I'm not real sure how these people were picked.
Exactly. And again, to me, this goes back to the 17 at-large delegates. This was decided in a back room between all of the candidates' people. Now, let me throw out an example. And I'm not dogging this person, but I think this is a true statement. This is also out of the State Journal. Ronna Romney McDaniel, chairwoman of the Michigan Republican Party, said she's committed to Trump for the first round. She said she wouldn't speculate on hypotheticals about whether she'd change her vote if Trump didn't get enough delegate support this summer. She also wouldn't say who her second pick might be if it came down to it. Now, Ronna Romney McDaniel is Mitt Romney's niece, and I don't believe she's a Cruz fan, and I don't believe she's a Trump fan. So, and she won't commit to how many times she's going to vote for Trump, but she is a Trump delegate. And there's no way that the Trump people can be happy about this because when you get to the state convention or the national convention in Cleveland, there's a ton of these people that they're going to vote for who they supported the first round and they're going to switch. And I would imagine she is a Kasich person would be my guess.
That would be my guess. It's as you look through the list of names, it's kind of interesting. I mean what are they going to do on this after the first vote? And I can't imagine that Cruz and Trump are real pleased with some of these names.
It wouldn't seem to be, but apparently their people agreed to it, which is really quite shocking to me because what was the trade-off? I mean, there had to be something, but who knows what it was because I wasn't in the room.
Well, no, they probably did that on Thursday night, you know.
Very possible. It's just one of those things. And see, here's the other thing that cracks me up is you're hearing about all of this on the Republican side. But if you look at Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, I mean, Bernie Sanders has been winning a lot and he never gets any closer with the delegates.
Well, they got what they call the superdelegates.
Right. The superdelegates are committed before anybody votes. It is a bizarre system. And we've virtually never seen this in our lifetime because the last time there was a contested Republican election was 1976. I was 15 and I'm pretty old now. I mean, that was a long time ago.
Well, that I think is the best thing about this election. It has opened a lot of eyes on the Democratic side and the Republican Party side that this is very aggravating to watch it. Basically hear your national Republican leaders say, it's our party. We will pick who we want. But we've been funneled down into a two-party system. So the parties are actually picking the candidates for us. And it's opened a lot of people's eyes.
Right. Because on both sides of the aisle, if they don't like the person that may get the nomination, because the Democrats clearly don't like Sanders, the Republicans clearly don't like Trump or Cruz, the rules will get adjusted to try to stop them from getting the nomination. It's not like a representative republic. It's not like a democracy when it comes down to the primaries. It just isn't.
Not at all.
I thought you might find this interesting. Back to one of these local issues, and again, I'm getting up there in years. But I remember distinctly when I was in college that being a student and living in the dorm, that was not your residence. Your residence was where your parents lived, where you came from. And that's where you voted, is where your permanent residence was. And I caught this on the news this morning, and it really surprised me, that there's a voter registration drive heads to MSU's campus. And I thought, well, that's interesting. So I decided to Google it this morning. And in the state of Michigan, and I found this kind of amazing, you can register at school or at home. Students have a choice about where to register to vote. Students attending college in Michigan may register to vote at their school address if they presently intend to make it their residence and to return there after any temporary absence like summer vacation. I find that very interesting that the Ingham County clerk was going to MSU's campus, because clearly East Lansing's a pretty liberal town.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know this, but I think one of the reasons they're pretty liberal is because the college students get to vote in the local election. And I just never knew that. I find that quite amazing. I don't know what stops a person from registering at home and at college at that point. I mean, I would think you might be able to. I don't know, but interesting.
Well, it's kind of like that local tax issue where if you own a business in a town, you're not allowed to vote on the tax to raise business's tax. It's like this: these kids will be voting, and then they will move out of the area, but they're making decisions for the residents and the property owners.
Correct. Absolutely. It was – well, you bring up a point. It's kind of a couple of years ago, Charlotte was going to have an income tax, and the people of Charlotte that live in town get to vote on that. But I own a business in town. I would have to pay the tax, but wouldn't have the opportunity to vote on if – I had to pay the tax or not. Seems kind of bad, and you just don't realize it until it happens to you, quite frankly.
And I think that's what's going on right now in the country is things are happening to people now, and they're seeing things that they're starting to pay attention and getting a little angry at the system. And you're not going to change the federal government, but you can change Charlotte. You can change Eaton County, your townships. And that's kind of the focus. What we're trying to do is get it back down to the local level to try to make a difference.
Absolutely. I ran across an article, and I just found this fascinating. And again, this is not local. It's more national, but it really applies to everybody. Ex-speaker Hastert molested a boy 14 years old, prosecutors say. And I had thought this before, but I kind of dug back through it to make sure that this was accurate. All right, so Dennis Hastert, the former Speaker of the House from 99 to 2007, I believe, was a teacher from 1965 to 1981. He was in the Illinois House of Representatives after that for three terms. He was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in 1986, and he resigned in 2007. He then earned millions as a lobbyist. The speaker, after he left, received $40,000 a month to have an office for up to 5 years, because, of course, the ex-speaker needs to have an office and a staff because, well, who knows why.
And you can't get a good building for less than $40,000 a month.
No. Any reasonable office space is roughly $40,000 a month in my area anyway.
Right.
And then he earned millions on real estate deals while he was in Congress. Now, here's the crazy thing. He did not go to, he's not going to prison, or he didn't get arrested for child molestation because it happened so many years ago. He was arrested because he withdrew structured large amounts of cash out of his own account and then lied to the FBI about it. That's what he was prosecuted for. And the guy's a child molester. I mean, the system has gotten so crazy, it's absolutely unbelievable to me.
How do you even comment on that?
Oh, you could come up with something.
Oh, well, I just think it's ironic that you get a red flag from the FBI for drawing cash out of you. I mean, he's making millions off tax dollars, getting 40 grand a month for rent from tax dollars. But the red flag is he pulled his own cash out of his own bank account and then lied to the feds about it.
Yep. So, and here's the crazy thing. When he went into the U.S. Congress, he was worth, and it's here somewhere in the article, I can't see it, roughly $200,000. When he left, he was worth between $4 and $17 million. He did all of these real estate deals. And I mean, they list them. Crazy stuff that you think there's no way you can get away with that. And he did. And he made tons of money. And then what I love, there's a bit in the article. He was a big supporter of the Patriot Act. As speaker, Hastert shepherded the USA Patriot Act in 2001 to passage in the House on a 357-66 vote. Now, that's pretty impressive. Right after 9/11, you know. Okay, here's the irony of this. 14 years later, federal prosecutors used the Patriot Act's expansion of currency transaction reporting requirements to indict Hastert on federal charges.
He may be having second thoughts right on that vote now.
I wish he wouldn't have pushed that one forward. But honestly, you see stuff like that and you think this is absolutely impossible, and it happens. And the crazy thing is you start peeling back the onion, if you want to say it that way. There's all kinds of stuff like that on the local level. I mean, not that big, not in my imagination, that egregious, but things that are really quite strange that people wouldn't like if they knew about it. They just don't know about it.
Well, how do these folks go into office with $100,000, $200,000 in their bank, and they come out with millions?
This is bizarre. One of the things, he got an earmark, pork barrel spending, to run an interstate out through his former hometown in Illinois for hundreds of millions of dollars. And then he bought up the property that they were going to run through, honest to God, and sold it a year later at a $1.8 million profit. And that there's nothing wrong with. Seriously, he did it. They knew he did it, and he didn't violate any laws.
So that's not like insider trading.
No, heck no. Nothing like that. So, I mean, $1.8 million on one single real estate deal while he was Speaker of the House and while he knew it was going to happen, he bought the land up before the government could and made it buy it from them, him.
Well, no wonder they try so hard to win re-election.
Absolutely. It's profitable, to say the least. So anyway, just some of the weird things that go on. What we would like to do throughout this show, and we're going to do it once a week, is start giving you some pointers and some ideas about how you can get involved at the local level. Kent and I have done it. Kent ran for county commissioner, what, 10 years ago?
6 years ago.
6 years ago and lost. And you ran 2 years ago and won.
Correct.
And it took a little bit for us. I mean, we kind of worked together on these things to figure out how to run a campaign, because people aren't real gung-ho about helping you when they realize that you're not really going to be on their side, whether they're Democrat or Republican. But you did it, and you made it fun.
Well, and it's the old tactic, just knock on doors and talk to people. And to be quite honest, the more you talk to people, most of them aren't aligned to a party if you can talk common sense to them.
Right.
They'll listen to common sense, most of them, and just tell them what the issues are locally.
Well, and you knew what the issues were, and you covered every door, what, twice in two townships?
Pretty much every door, yeah.
And we did a couple of these things together where you had a cookout and had like 20 friends, and we went out and went door to door for you and made it fun. And got elected to a position, you've had a big impact as one out of 15 county commissioners.
Well, as big an impact as you can have is one out of 15. But, they take notice. So if you can get 7 out of 15, even better.
Well, and folks, I forgot to mention, this segment of the show was brought to you by the Eaton County Home and Business Expo, which is this weekend, the 16th and 17th of April, at the Charlotte High School in beautiful metropolitan sunny, always sunny in Charlotte, Michigan. So come on out. Admission is free. We've got about 100 businesses that are set up. We're going to have the farmer's market there. It's going to be a great time, a lot of games and things for the kids. So, folks, please come on out, the Charlotte or the Eaton County Home and Business Show in Charlotte this weekend.
And to add to that, the Kent and Neal show will be there, and we'll sign autographs.
Oh, right, like, all day long.
Right.
If anybody wants one, which right. I find that hard to believe.
Who doesn't like Thunderstruck?
Oh, absolutely. Jessica was mentioning when we said, let's throw that song in about the Thunderstruck drinking game. And I played that one time on the beach at Hilton Head. Not good. Not good at all.
You lost.
I did lose huge.
Did you get the long Thunderstruck? Okay.
And then I crawled the long way back to the house. It was a long crawl, no doubt about it. Kids were very impressed. I shouldn't have done that. I tell you what, the studio is so cool. It just is. And the fact that you know what all those buttons do, Jessica, you're like a NASA employee. I mean,
well
she was slapping my hands. So get away from me. Don't touch them.
Yeah, don't touch things. Just talk.
Here's something hopefully you'll find a little bit interesting. I find this completely amazing. Headline says, more aides sought to investigate campus crime. Senators say federal agency needs another $137 million. Now, this kind of hits home. I don't know if you remember when George Will came to MSU and did one of the graduation ceremonies, was a keynote speaker. And there were a number of protesters talking about George Will. And I'm not really that big a George Will fan, but they were protesting him being there because, he's just a Neanderthal. But he wrote an article. It was in the Washington Post. George Will says colleges become victims of progressivism. It says college and universities are being educated by Washington and are finding the experience excruciating. Consider the supposed campus epidemic of rape or sexual assault. So I'm just going to read this real quick as an example. They've now decided mutually she thought just to be friends. This is a girl who filed charges. When he ended up falling asleep on her bed, she changed into her pajamas and climbed in next to him. Soon he was putting his arm around her and taking off her clothes. I basically said, no, I don't want to have sex with you. And then he said, okay, that's fine, and stopped. And then he started again a few minutes later, taking off my panties, taking off his boxers. I just kind of laid there and didn't do anything. I had already said no. I was just tired and wanted to go to bed. I let him finish. I pulled my panties back on and went to sleep. Now, that story might have been a little disgusting. Sorry about that. But 6 weeks later, that woman reported that she had been raped. Now, that just seems crazy to me. And then here's an article.
Well, I'm just curious what basically no meant. I mean, I thought no was no, but what is basically said no?
Yeah, I don't know where you throw the basically in at.
Can I throw a woman's perspective in there?
Yes, please do it.
Okay, so there's quite a difference between saying no and being adamant about it than saying no, but I'm still going to let you take my panties off and I'm still going to let you do it. To me, as a female, as a woman, and, you know, having been in strange situations before, that's not rape. That's not date rape. Date rape is when you're, you know, fighting against somebody and they're still adamant about trying to do something. If you're not really fighting back with that person, you're allowing them to do that. You can't run around and say rape afterward. And this is what makes people who actually do get raped have such a hard time in our legal system actually getting justice for it, is people like this.
Jesse,
in my opinion.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's exactly my feeling.
Yeah.
Well, the whole story, I mean, she's offered him into the bed. She goes, gets her pajamas on and basically said no and now files charges.
Yeah, you either say no or you don't. You either try to fight somebody off or you don't. There's no basically or gray area when it comes to, you know, rape. It's either it happened or if it didn't. And if he allowed someone to do something, they didn't rape you. You allowed them to do it.
Well, but I think getting back to
In my opinion.
Yes. I completely agree.
As a female.
But getting back to what Neil, I think, was heading, is the government. Thank you for your input. Is basically we need to throw hundreds of millions of dollars at it, don't we, Neil?
$137 million or $174 million. Now, this is interesting. The administration, this is still from George Will's article, the administration's crucial and contradictory statistics are validated the usual way by official repetition. Joe Biden has been heard from. The statistics are 1 in 5 women is sexually assaulted while in college, and only 12% of the assaults are reported. Simple arithmetic demonstrates that if the 12% reporting rate is correct, the 20% assault rate is preposterous. Mark Perry of the American Enterprise Institute notes, for example, that in 4 years, 2009 to 2012, there were 98 reported sexual assaults at Ohio State University. That would be 12% of 817 total out of a female student population of approximately 28,000. For a sexual assault rate of approximately 2.9%, that's too high, but it's certainly nowhere near 20%. So then there's an article, U of M revamps its policy on sexual misconduct. Same kind of storyline. So you get to the end of it. A separate survey released earlier this fall concluded U of M showed that more than 20% of undergraduate females said they experienced non-consensual sexual behavior in the past year. About 12% of the female undergraduates said they experienced non-consensual sexual penetration. I don't know what that is. And I'm not even going to venture a guess, but it's weird to me that the percentages are the same at the national level and at U of M. And honest to God, I mean, if these college students are this big of pigs, the men I'm saying, then maybe their parents need slapped. I don't know, but I just can't believe these numbers. But the result is the Justice Department is going to have to throw another $174 million at a problem that I can't believe exist to the level they say it does. And again, I went to college. I was in a little dorm. If there was an issue between a guy and a girl in that dorm, there were about 40 people that could hear somebody scream if they did. I don't – what am I missing? I just don't believe this stuff.
No, I have to agree with you on that. I think that there are way too many women that say, oh, well, I was buzzed. He took advantage of me. I consider that rape. Well, okay, you're weeble wobbling on a really fine line because God knows you were probably drunk when you did this and you regretted it the day after and then decided to say, well, you know, it was rape because I said no, but then I still let him do it. That's different. You know, rape is fighting against somebody and saying no and being adamant about it. Not like, no, I don't really feel like doing this. I don't, it's too soon. But then you still do it. That's different.
I see. And again, I agree with you completely because what's happening, and again, taking this back to the political level, which might be a bit of a stretch for some, but bear with me for a moment.
That's a lot of money, though.
It's a lot of money. And the boards of trustees and the U of M Board of Regents is completely controlled by very liberal people. And what happens is 2 years ago, and it's happening again this fall, at the next, because there'll be two Republican state conventions this year, which again seems bizarre, and there'll probably be two Democrat conventions. I don't know. They won't let me come to theirs, but I don't know why either. But at the Republican convention, you select people to run for the U of M Board of Regents, the Michigan State Board of Trustees, Wayne State, Central Michigan, all of the different schools. And then when they find those people, how much money do they give them to run a statewide campaign, Kent?
Oh, for our children and the educational system, I would think they would throw millions of dollars at supporting a good candidate for running for one of those educational positions, trustees. I'm just guessing probably $500 million.
Right, at least that much. But they gave $400, I believe, last time to a statewide candidate. I don't know if it was MSU Board of Trustees. I don't know. But, I mean, we're talking under $1,000. That's how the state Republican Party helps statewide candidates get elected. Now, if you had conservatives, common sense people on these boards, I think they would put a stop to some of this craziness. But there aren't. And if you print out, look at the Board of Trustees or the Board of Regents for any one of these big schools, they're all huge liberals. And that's where this stuff starts. And it never ends. It just keeps progressing. The same thing, and I'll jump off on another tangent real quick, but if you've seen the whole transgendered bathroom issue, and we can get into a huge discussion about this, but it's going to come to a school near you. I mean, it's undoubtedly. Kent, what do you think?
It already is. I mean, if you start looking locally, you will see this locally in your schools. It's coming.
Well, and I saw an article about a Grand Rapids school. I've got a couple articles here with me. But mark my words. Get online, Google Michigan State Board of Education. There are – and I can't – off the top of my head, there are either five members or seven. No, there are either seven or nine, I believe. There are only two Republicans. One gentleman I heard speak, he's a doctor. I don't have his name in front of me, who I believe are conservatives. These people are left-wing zealots. I have a granddaughter. I don't want somebody's so-called transgendered son in the bathroom with her. Call me a Neanderthal. I don't care.
But you're just old-fashioned, Neil.
I'm just old, actually. Right. But I mean, it to me, it's just so bizarre, and it's perpetrated by the people that get elected to these positions. And the Republican Party, on a statewide basis, gives no money and pays no attention to those elected positions that are crucially important for our future. They ignore them completely.
Well, and that's a good point, is because when they want to do something, they say, well, it's for our children. It's our, you know, we got to think of our children. What better example to think of your children than positions in education to try to fight back some of the stuff?
Absolutely. And they talk about in a couple of the articles I was looking at, it's the rate of suicide amongst LGBTQ people and transgender people are higher than normal because they get bullied and picked on. Honestly, if you are genetically a boy and you are going into the girls' bathroom because it's your right, which is bizarre in my opinion, but you're doing that, are you going to get picked on more or less? I don't understand any of the argument.
But it's a straw argument. It's an agenda-driven argument. And we read an article this week on what'd they call it? Genetic sexual attraction. So they're yes. No longer calling it incest.
GSA.
Right. It's GSA now, where a son is attracted to his mother or a father to his daughter. And it's not bad now. It's a disorder or a genetic sexual attraction. It's just normal. And that's where we're going.
Well, here's part of that article, Kent, that you just referenced. The couple were brought together after Ben, who was living in the U.S., sent his England-born mom, a letter out of the blue in 2013. 2 years before Ben had married his wife, Victoria, who he later split up with to be in a relationship with his mom.
Mom.
Kim gave up Ben for adoption when he was just a week old, and they were only reunited 30 years later. The pair began exchanging phone calls, and I love this. 3 days later, Ben told a disgusted Victoria he was leaving her for his mom, and the couple flew to Michigan where they had help from another GSA couple in setting up a new life.
Well, correct, and I believe in that article, Neil, mom said the sex was awesome.
Yep. Kim told The New Day, sex with Ben was incredible and mind-blowing. She said, this is not incest. It is GSA. We are like peas in a pod and meant to be together. Honest to God, does it get any more bizarre? And this is in Michigan. This is not...
We're not talking across the world in a third world country.
No. So, folks, bringing it back to the local level... This stuff with the transgendered bathrooms will be coming to your school system, your kids, your grandkids. I don't think it's right, and I can't believe it's being pushed by the State Board of Education. It's also being pushed by the ACLU because this is a violation of Title IX.
Well, yeah, because of the women's right in sports and the whole issue on that, which covers every issue, obviously.
Apparently. I mean, seriously. Title IX, I thought, and I looked it up, there was a very short explanation, was to make sure that women did not get second-rate extracurricular activities in schools and colleges because the boys' sports dominated had the bigger crowds and so on and so forth. So it elevated them to the same level.
Well, I believe the intent was that equal time for gyms, and I didn't disagree with that so much. But now they've stretched it through the ACLU for sexual stuff.
Right. Absolutely. So now Title IX applies to people who are transgendered. And before Bruce Jenner, how many people ever heard of trans? I mean, seriously.
It's Caitlyn.
Sorry, Caitlyn Jenner. And I wonder if Caitlyn is given the gold medal back now that that she's a woman and competed as a man. But anyway, this stuff is coming to your school system. And then the schools wonder why they're losing students to private schools, to homeschoolers. Folks don't want this.
Which, to tie this in, what you were talking about at the state level, where the parties give no money to education, people run for boards on U of M or MSU, you've got to get involved in your local school boards and go to school meetings and find out what's going on if you've got kids in school. Because you can't count on the parties or the state to take care of them.
No, you're absolutely right. And when you... When you look at these things and start bringing them down to the local level, if we don't have the support of major political parties on these issues, and we don't really, we've got to take it on ourselves. And, you know, there's so many things that when you get involved a little bit and start looking under the surface, there are some things out there that most people disagree with. They just don't know what's going on.
Right. And if you go to one of your local county party meetings, they will try to spin you, and you've got to get involved with a handful of people that can get something done. And it's normally not the party. You've got to take the horns and guide your ship.
Yeah, true statement. And we've been able to do quite a bit of that stuff. And the interesting thing, it's like I went to the local newspaper and asked them if they minded if I would write an article occasionally for the paper with kind of a conservative spin. They were happy to. It's amazing the things you can accomplish if you try and amazing the things you can do if you ask. And we need some real leaders to stand up. And I know some great people. You know some great people. They're busy folks. A lot of people have businesses. They don't want their business to be hurt because they take a stand on something. I've got a small business. I found my business has been enhanced because – there are people that agree with me and they want to do business because I do take a stand on things. So I think that misconception's out there. It doesn't really apply, but most people think that it does.
Well, to speak on when you went to the newspaper and said, could you do an article? The worst thing they could have said was no. Well, they didn't. And the priceless thing about you getting that is they give you a journalist press pass. And to watch you come in with that around your neck and sit at the press table and watch the commissioners and some of the – what's he doing at the table? Well, Neil's a press guy now, man, because he asked and you had some an idea. You went with it and they said, sure, sounds great.
So I tell you, you can get involved. You can make a heck of a difference and if you just decide to do it. And we've learned a little bit about campaigning and a little bit about how to do some of this stuff, and it's really not as difficult as you think. It's just intimidating because you've not done it before.
Well, you remember a couple of years back, we had some ideas on how to start a PAC and how to do certain things, and somebody in the parties, you know, up in higher levels, well, it's very complicated, Neil. Takes a lot of paperwork, a lot of rules. What did you do? I think it took 30 minutes, 40 minutes, figured it out. I think there's a pack out there, ain't there?
Right. And none of it was that complicated. It's just new and different. And it's kind of like, you know, run into it all the time. You're going to go talk to your mechanic, and it's intimidating because you can't speak the language. But with a little bit of study, it doesn't take long that you can speak the language. I want to throw this out. This has been in the news along with the transgendered in the schools issue. In North Carolina, Governor Pat McCrory recently signed legislation that requires transgendered people to use bathrooms that match their sex at birth and bars local communities from adopting anti-discrimination ordinances to get around the law. That doesn't sound that earth-shattering to me. It kind of makes sense.
Well, I think aren't they all boycotting now because of this stuff? We had people that – wasn't that North Carolina you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, who was it? Bruce Springsteen or canceled a concert? Because I go, you got to be kidding me. You know, if this was a baker refusing to do this, they'd have him in jail. you know, why is Bruce Springsteen boycotting North Carolina? The mayor, I think mayor of New York.
I believe the governor of New York.
A governor. Yeah. Banning all state travel to the state.
To North Carolina because North Carolina wants a girl to go in the girls' restroom and a boy to go in the boys' restroom. It's just not that earth-shattering to me. And it's not worth boycotting the state, but they do it anyway. Kent, would you like to hear your horoscope? This is kind of interesting. Those who know you well are expecting you to succeed. And so so are those who don't know you. That's because success is your vibe these days. Anyone who isn't rooting for you is an obvious way doesn't belong on your team. You think I made that up? That's your actual
horoscope. Yeah, I think you did make that up.
For yesterday. Swear to God, I wouldn't make that up.
Because I don't really think they're all rooting for me, Neil.
Oh, no, everybody is. Now, here's my mind's not quite as good. Stressful moments have a way of constricting your creativity and thought processes. Laughter is an experience of opening up and getting everything flowing again. You'll be at your best when you keep looking for the humor. See, my problem is, if you look at the caricature for the show, it shows my teeth being huge. And I have big teeth, so everybody thinks I'm happy and smiling all the time when I really can't close my mouth.
Well, you're growling.
Right, exactly. Well, Jessica got a kick out of that one anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are just really, really... really smiley and happy, and you have just this great energy, which I feel like is contagious.
Oh, God, I hope so. Well, that sounds good to me.
You've told me that for years. Can't you got to quit looking angry. Just smile and fake it.
Right.
Because fake it till you make it.
Yep. And that's what we're trying to do here today. So, again, you know, not to beat a dead horse, but we've got to get people involved at the local level. Kent and I have gone around and spoke to some different groups. There are some people out there that are really upset with the direction of America. And what they're most upset about, we had some friends, and we may have been some of those people. But at the second the re-election of President Obama, there were a lot of people on the conservative side of things that were extremely upset and frustrated and distraught. And you can't do anything about what goes on at the national level. You can't do very little about what goes on at the state level. But if we had common sense, independent organizations in each town, in each county, and those organizations spread, and we lived by some basic principles, the political parties would have to start doing things our way and getting back to some of the basics that I think are what made this country great. Socialism did not make the United States of America the country it is today.
No. And I think there's a to segue into that, we've had our congressman tell some of our members, it's our job to get him elected. It appalled me that some of these folks think it's our job to get them elected and do things. They forget that they work for us. And doing it at the local level from county to county, you get enough support, they'll be coming to your meetings and they'll be calling you, saying, hey, what can I do for you?
Absolutely right. And like in the 7th District, not that we were talking about our congressman or anything, but in the 7th District, there are 7 counties. If there were some 7 common sense organizations within those counties, the congressman would start to do things our way instead of him wanting us to do things his way. And again, most of these liberals, and we've seen it before, with these crazy ideas have never had any pushback. And we keep waiting for our party, whoever that might be, to do something about it. Folks, they're not going to. They like their position. They like big government. And we've got to be the forces for change. And we can do it. It's not that complicated. Swear to God.
Well, and that's one of our 5 basic principles we're trying to get through is return government to its traditional roles and cutting the size of – it's into everything. I just left a planning meeting. That you can't put up a building, you can't hardly put up a shade in your house on a window without a permit. It's right at your local level, and we've got to start reducing government.
I had a friend, this is one of those wacky stories, started a business in Eaton County, and they were negotiating, had to talk to the Planning Commission. I won't say exactly what jurisdiction, but the Planning Commission had a problem because there weren't the required number of trees per parking space. at this business. Now, he didn't own the building. He was just trying to rent it. And they made him jump through hoops because they needed more trees per parking space. And again, things like this nobody knows about. But it hurts business. It hurts growth. It hurts jobs. And we've been put up with it for years.
Absolutely. And it's spinning faster and faster.
Yep. And at the township level, you can change rules like that. It doesn't take very many people. It's just the people don't know it. Or it hasn't affected them yet, like so many of the government regs.
Which is the great thing about what's going on now. Is it's starting to affect people, and people are paying attention. We've been in 4 decades of asleep. We've let government do everything without checking them. I believe this cycle has woken the giant.
Yep. True statement, Kent.
And I know we're running out of time. Thank you, Jessica, for getting us through our first show today.
You guys did great. You know, everyone I feel like is nervous their first show, but you guys did an amazing job. So
you're awesome.
You
seriously.
Fill up the hour pretty quickly and pretty easily. No, thank you. You guys are awesome. And it's actually been really informative, and I get paid to learn. I love that.
Oh. Wow. Well, if I had a nickel for every time I heard that, I'd have a nickel.
Well, I'm happy I got to at least speak today, because usually we go out and speak at places, and there's like 2 minutes left in our segment of time. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, Neil, I had a couple things I'd like to say. So I appreciate you giving me a few minutes anyway, Neil.
My pleasure, truly. And thanks to the folks that listen. You know, we might be a little rough at this at first. We will get better. We're passionate about it. You can make a difference, and we'll have fun figuring out how. Honest to God.
I'm very excited, actually. And today I was very nervous, so. But thank you, Jessica.
No, yes, thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
And
it's been a blast.
See you next week.
Absolutely.